pantries have been swamped, and the pressure to keep up with increasing demand has stretched the generosity of many communities. We want to hear from you. Tell us what you did to stretch a food dollar or to help people in your town. Stay with us for Working It Out Live right after the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Obama is ordering federal agencies to develop higher fuel economy standards for new vehicles in a bid to cut pollution. Mr. Obama says it'll be a broad money saver.
The typical driver will save roughly $3,000 over the life of the vehicle. We'll reduce our dependence on oil by 1.8 billion barrels and cut nearly a billion tons of greenhouse gas emissions.
In a ceremony in the Rose Garden today, President Obama also ordered agencies that are already implementing new standards to work on stronger rules past the year 2017. The U.S. Senate has approved a bill aimed at rewriting the regulatory system for Wall Street. The legislation passed on a vote of 59 to 39. More on this from NPR's Audie Cornish.
A handful of Republicans crossed party lines to support the legislation. The rest of the caucus sided with Alabama Senator Richard Shelby of the Banking Committee in arguing that the bill was an overreach, especially in the area of consumer protection.
I favor consumer protection. I believe all of us do. This new bureau, however, promises to be more abusive than protective.
The legislation would create a consumer protection bureau within the Federal Reserve with its own chief, budget, and powers to police personal credit. Mortgages, credit cards, payday loans, and more would fall under its scrutiny. The bill heads next to a conference between House and Senate lawmakers who will reconcile their two versions of the legislation. That's expected to take weeks. Audie Cornish, NPR News, the Capitol.
The German parliament is behind the country's share of a huge rescue fund for the euro that includes nearly $1 trillion in loans to support the sliding currency. European politicians say the bailout's vital to stopping a debt crisis from ballooning and dragging down the continent's economy. More details from Thomas Martzall in Berlin.
A narrow majority of lawmakers in the Bundestag, or lower house, voted in favor of the $184 billion measure. German Chancellor Angela Merkel had been seeking broad cross-party support for the loan package. Instead, even a dozen members of her own conservative coalition joined the leftist opposition parties. Many legislators say the government had tried to railroad the law through Parliament. Their constituents are angered at having to support spendthrift European neighbors like Greece and Spain, whose budgets and deficits have ballooned in recent years. As a sign that Washington is worried the European debt crisis could affect the U.S. recovery, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner will now hold high-level talks in Britain and Germany next week at the end of a trip to Asia. For NPR News, I'm Thomas Martzall in Berlin.
A day after being shaken by the European debt crisis, looks like U.S. stocks are turning higher. At last check, the Dow was up more than 90 points at 10,161. NASDAQ up 26 points at 2,230. This is NPR News.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio News. It's 12:04. Good afternoon. I'm Dan Kogan. A new economic forecast says New England will not return to pre-recession job levels until the middle of 2013. University of New Hampshire economist Ross Cattell, who is the author of the forecast, says the worst is over and the economy is turning a corner, but it will take an extended period of time to recover the nearly 366,000 jobs lost in New England over the past 2 years. The New England Economic Partnership produced the forecast. It says all six states are expected to see employment growth by the end of the current quarter, but the region's unemployment rate will continue to rise or to peak of 9.3% by the start of 2011. Gattell says the unemployment rate is likely to continue rising because the labor force is expanding. New Hampshire Attorney General Michael Delaney is scheduled to hold a news conference today to discuss his findings on the proposed affiliation between Catholic Medical Center in Manchester and Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center. Delaney has been reviewing the legality of the proposal, which would integrate Catholic Medical Center into Dartmouth-Hitchcock Health, a regional health care organization. Supporters say the proposed affiliation will improve health care access and care options. Opponents say it would be impossible to integrate the hospital and to uphold Catholic standards, such as prohibitions against abortion and research that results in the destruction of embryos. And 11 states in the Northeast, including New Hampshire, are asking Federal Railroad officials to develop a plan to dramatically upgrade high-speed passenger rail service along the Northeast Corridor over the next four decades. The coalition says the effort is aimed at producing one of the most comprehensive and inclusive transportation plans ever attempted. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
Support for NPR comes from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, whose Kids Count special report addresses the importance of reading by the end of third grade at AECF.org.
Support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from UR members in the Common Man family of restaurants and inns, a socially responsible business supporting the good works of nonprofit organizations throughout New Hampshire, theseaman.com. And Plymouth State University's Master of Education in Heritage Studies, exploring the relationships between history, literature, culture, and the environment, plymouth.edu/graduate. New Hampshire weather this afternoon, sunshine, highs today, upper 60s north, upper 70s south, mostly clear tonight, lows upper 30s north, around 50 in the south. Good afternoon, it's 12:06. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm John Greenberg, and this is Working It Out Live. About one out of 12 people in the state are on food stamps, more than 100,000. That's just one way that the recession has crossed paths with the most basic of human activities, eating. This week in our series, Eating In, NHPR has been looking at food, and now it's our turn to put an economic spin on the topic. We know that food prices have slowly been creeping up while the typical household income has taken a beating. That's not a pretty combination. It hits families, grocers, restaurants, farmers, and the food pantries that aim to fill the gap when paying for groceries is simply out of reach. We've seen big shifts in habits. On the less encouraging side, sales of inexpensive snacks are up. But there's also been a revival of home cooking. More people than ever are getting into raising their own food, whether it's a backyard vegetable garden or a backyard chicken coop. Food that used to go to waste is now finding a market. Today on Working It Out Live, we dig into food and the recession. This entire project is nothing without your stories, and during the next hour, we'd love to hear from you. If you're on the business side, what trends have you seen, and how has that changed what you do? If you're just a regular consumer, what have you done differently to keep your meals healthy and affordable? Our toll-free number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-6477. Joining me in the studio is Rachel Forrest. Rachel writes about food and restaurants for the Portsmouth Herald and is also active in Share Our Strength, an organization that helps feed the hungry. Thanks for coming in, Rachel.
Thanks very much for having me.
This downturn changed what you buy at the store and how you cook at home. So tell me about that.
It definitely has. And I have had this glamorous life as a food writer and restaurant critic. And up until about 2 years ago, I was out trying out all the spring menus when they would come into the restaurants. And but now the restaurateurs are emailing me and saying, Rachel, where have you been? You haven't been in for a while. And the reason is I'm cooking at home much more. Going to restaurants was a big part of my social life. And it is. It's great fun. It's a part of a lot of people's social life. But my challenge now for myself is to cook at home as inexpensively and as healthily as possible. And that's what I'm doing.
So how are you cooking at home differently? Are you using different recipes? What's your basic approach?
Well, I'm going out and trying to find the very healthy foods and choosing different supermarkets, actually. I'm going to different supermarkets that are less expensive and are offering a lot more fresh produce. I'm going to the farmer's market now that things are coming into season. I'm trying to buy mostly in season because, as we know, our local organic food is actually quite expensive. So there's a choice to be made there. So I'm also looking around at recipes and swapping recipes with other families who are actually making a challenge as well out of cooking healthily and inexpensively at home.
Do you have any sense whether the local producers, particularly the local organic producers, might be bracing themselves to take a hit because of this recession, because it's more expensive?
I have not seen that yet. The people who really are dedicated to buying local organic food, locally sourced food, are still doing so. They're able to make that decision and budget for that. I try to budget for that for the things that are the most important to me. But I when I'm staring at a dozen eggs for $4.50 versus 99 cents at the supermarket, that's a tough choice. You have to pick your battles.
Wearing your hat as a restaurant critic, are they doing things that you haven't seen before?
Yes. I do talk to the restaurant owners who are opening new restaurants. I'm flabbergasted that new restaurants are still opening.
Brave souls.
Yes. But when I go in and do business stories and talk to the restaurateurs when they've just opened or about to open a restaurant, I ask them, well, what do you think about this economy? I mean, aren't you a little frightened about what's going on here? People aren't going out as much. They're not paying as much for food out in a restaurant. And for the first time a restaurateur, Jay McSherry in Portsmouth at his new place, 106 Kitchen and Bar, said to me, we accounted for the economy when we conceptualized this restaurant. The prices are lower. They make it more comfortable to have more casual experiences eating at the bar. The restaurants that are opening now have very lower price points. They're more welcoming of people who are on lower incomes, and they make it more comfortable for those people. Fine dining restaurants, you're not seeing those open.
Okay, they're not stepping into the waters right now.
They are not stepping in the waters.
Now, when restaurants try to scale back, what are they doing to scale back and make it not as pricey as it might have been before?
Our fine dining restaurants are thinking of clever ways to get people to come into the restaurants, offering – we'll have restaurant weeks, of course, which are a couple weeks out of the year, three courses for $29.95 or lunches. But what restaurants are doing now is offering those same deals all during the week. So – and, you know, Facebook is great for that because they are pushing out all sorts of specials, a three-course meal, a prefix meal, $19 at some fine dining restaurants. So that's what they're trying to do to get people to come in so people can still go out and have the big, great social experience that dining out is and entertainment and have great food at fine dining restaurants but be able to afford it.
Okay, well, you're listening to Working It Out Live. I'm John Greenberg, and our topic today is food and the economy. We'd like to hear from you. Our toll-free number is 1-800-892-6477. That number again, 1-800-892-6477. Talking here with Rachel Forrest, who writes for the Portsmouth Herald. I'd like to know, what are you doing to make your food dollar go further? And if you're in the food business, what changes have you seen from both suppliers and customers? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Rachel, you work at Share Our Strength.
I do. I'm on the board of Share Our Strength.
What are you seeing there? I mean, you would expect so many more people are on food stamps that the demand for food at the various food pantries would be higher.
It is going up. And when we talked to the New Hampshire Food Bank and our own Seacoast Food Family Food Pantry, the demand is up. But what's happening is that, for example, last year for our big Taste of the Nation event, which is coming up on June 23rd this year, last year our tickets sold out much more quickly than they thought than we thought they would. And I think what is happening is that people understand in the public that there is a greater need and are willing to, you know, pay the price for the ticket, even though it might, you know, hurt a little bit more this year. And we're noticing our ticket sales for the event are going much more quickly than anticipated this year, too. So people are really pitching in to help out.
Well, that's true on the Seacoast. It may be true elsewhere. Let's get a broader picture here of what the food bank scene is all about. We're going to go to Helen Costello. She runs the Recipe for Success program at the New Hampshire Food Bank. Hi, Helen.
Hi, John. How are you?
So can you give us the overview? We got one note on the Working It Out page from a food pantry, and they said it's hard for them to get what they need, even with the help from the food bank. Are you guys able to keep up?
We are, always working to keep up, as fast as we can at the pace that the need is going right now and has been for the last year or so. I did see that comment, and it's true that, sometimes when agencies come in, our shelves look low, and that's because we're just replenishing inventory as fast as we can, get it in.
What about the demand, though? I mean, is it remarkably higher, and are you seeing it more in certain parts of the state than in others? Because you work with agencies and food pantries all over the state.
Correct. We work with over 400 agencies throughout the entire state of New Hampshire. And just to give you an idea of how things have increased, a couple of years ago we were distributing a little under 3 million pounds of food a year. In 2009, we distributed 5.8 million pounds of food, and we're on target this year to distribute more than 6 million pounds of food. So
that's really an extraordinary growth, isn't it?
It is, and we're preparing for that continued growth, and both in our warehouse facilities and in securing food. And I'd like to just echo what Rachel just said about the community rallying behind the efforts. I'm glad to hear the Taste of the Nation ticket sales are going up. We're seeing when we make appeals out to the community, people will step forward. We just have to continue to do more of that, and we're just seeing more efforts in trying to raise money so we can purchase food or ask for more food donations from
Helen, I think Rachel's got a question for you here.
I do. Helen, are you seeing a difference in in who's coming into the food pantries?
Well, we work with the agencies directly. So agencies, from what the agencies tell us, yes, I mean, we're seeing more families who may have been contributors to us. Or had given to food drives in the past or contributed to the food bank in the past, needing assistance now because perhaps somebody in the family's lost a job and their benefits are running out, or both, it's a two-income household that's lost both incomes, and they're trying to make it on some assistance.
Helen,
so there are changes. The faces of people using the agencies are changing.
Do you have any sense, almost anecdotally, of what it's like for those people who used to be donors now finding themselves in the shoes of being a recipient? Do they take it well? Does it broaden their understanding of how we all fit together in this whole world?
From the people I've spoken with, it's definitely a very difficult change for them. And I think what we find is that people have been through that experience and then find jobs and get back on their feet financially again, is that they're even more giving and contributors again when they've been through that experience.
Because they know what it means.
They understand what that means to really have to cut their food budget, their entire household budget, but also affecting the types of foods their family may eat.
Helen, I just have a quick question here. The amount of food that you're providing is nearly doubled. Where has it come from? Where have the resources come from?
We source food from everywhere we can. So we're part of Feeding America, which is the national food banking network, and so we source food from there, and we'll be getting tractor trailer loads of either fresh food or canned food and basic staples. We raise a lot of money to purchase food. We have with the amount of food we're purchasing, we have purchasing power.
Helen, let me cut you off there. We're going to take a short break, and you stay with us. We'll get you to on the other side. I'm John Greenberg. More Working It Out Live on the way. We're interested in your experiences with food and the economy. 1-800-892-6477. Give us a call.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our members, and Merrimack County Savings Bank, helping communities thrive for over 143 years. With 7 full-service branches in Boca, Kentucky, Concord, and Nashua, themerrimack.com. From Alice Peck Day Memorial Hospital in Lebanon, now accepting new patients in primary care for all ages. Information at alicepeckday.org. And Crotchet Mountain School in Greenfield, nurturing growth, learning, sharing, and the singular joy of achievement for students with special needs. More information at crotchetmountain.org. New Hampshire weather this afternoon, sunshine. Today's highs, upper 60s north, upper 70s in the south. A mostly clear night tonight. Lows ranging upper 30s north, around 50 south. Nice weekend coming up tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs mid-70s. Sunday, mix of sunshine and clouds, highs upper 60s to the mid-70s. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm John Greenberg, and you're listening to Working It Out Live, NHPR's monthly call-in about how we're dealing with this recession and recovery. We'll be taking your calls shortly. We'd like to hear what you have to say about food and this economy. Are you finding it easier or harder to eat healthy meals? Are you doing more to help people in your community get the food they need? Our toll-free number is 1-800-892-6477. That number again, 1-800-892-6477. With me in the studio is Rachel Forrest. She's a food writer for the Portsmouth Herald. And on the line right now, we've got Helen Costello. She manages the New Hampshire Food Bank Recipe for Success program. Right before the break, Helen, you were talking about these additional sources of food that you're needing to bring in. I wonder, are you and your partners using different approaches, developing new ways of meeting this basic need that families have?
Well, you were asking about sources of food, and I was talking about the national sourcing, but we also source from regional and local grocery chains here in New Hampshire and New England, and from local farmers. Last year, we started doing more gleaning of local farms to get more fresh vegetables into the warehouse. We're growing some of our own. That's a very small portion of what we take in, but we use that in our programs. And some of our programming addresses how people can manage their food budget and sort of cook healthier and wiser on a low budget.
Well, that's an interesting point. Rachel, you deal with this, I think, a bit, looking at how people can really get a lot more out of their food dollar if they buy different foods.
Yeah, this is something that's been a challenge, I think, is that there's a whole sector of people out there who don't really know how to take advantage of our healthy food in terms of cooking it, and so they're going to go out and buy more ready-made processed foods instead of taking the beet greens off the top of the beets and seeing what they can make out of that. So I think there's something that needs to happen, and there's some groups that are doing that with Operation Frontline, for example, who are helping people learn how to take fresh foods that are inexpensive and make healthy, economical meals out of them. I went on a field trip with a nutritionist from Old Ways, Cindy Harriman, last week to the local supermarket, and we went through the aisles that had the healthy food, the beans, you know, the legumes, the pasta, and up to dandelion greens and feta cheese, and we're making healthy meals for just $2 a person. So, you know, that's something that we need to have more of a dialogue about and more education about.
Well, Helen and Rachel, I want to play for you a little bit from a woman named Veronica Forbes. She's 45, single mother of two teenage boys. So these boys can pack it in, right?
Wow.
and she's really turned it around for herself because she's learned you can eat well on a budget. And let's just listen to her right now talking about what she does with a chicken.
I basically just roast it pretty much plain. I'll put like onion and maybe some celery in there or something. Maybe throw a little pepper, salt and pepper on it. Then, I've got them to eat chicken salad sandwiches. So that uses up that's like the next step. Then when it starts getting slim pickings for the white meat, then I'll decide to make this. Then I'll make the soup because then I can get all that dark meat off. Which, like I said, there's a lot more meat left on it than you ever would realize. At least more than I ever realized. And then you get your soup.
So there you've got the soup. That's Veronica Forbes, who learned how to make chicken soup. She took that bold move. Helen, one of the things that Veronica was alluding to there is she never really used to use the dark meat. In the sort of courses that you guys are trying to develop and get out there, are you getting people to look at, in a sense, old foods in new ways?
Yes, John. What Veronica just relayed to us was the type of skills that we teach in our Operation Frontline classes, using a whole chicken, rather than the more expensive, deboned, skinless chicken, only white meat, so that if someone doesn't care for the dark meat as much, they can learn ways to use it in casseroles or soups where it still is appealing to them, but perhaps, and they would eat the white meat maybe the first meal that they make as part of their entree. So those are the types of things that mentioning, the greens, the beet greens and the beets, that's something that we always encourage people to use, any edible part of a plant or any edible part of the food, to make the most use of it, to get that, to stretch that food as much. And the greens, of course, are the most nutritious part of it. So those are all types of techniques that we use. And then, of course, looking at store brand and specials and manager specials and sales on foods, coupons where they make sense, not where they're encouraging people to buy more expensive
more things food. That they don't actually need, perhaps.
Correct.
Last question for you, Helen. Do you see this easing over the coming months, if only because there's maybe a greater abundance of local food in the summer and the fall? Does that take off some of the pressure?
Well, only if people have access to that local food. If they're eligible for, say, the WIC Farmers Market Nutrition Program coupons, and they can get some extra food at farmers markets. But other than that, it's tough for people to buy fresh fruits and vegetables when the prices are higher. So we encourage people to eat all types of all types of fruits and vegetables, whether they're frozen, canned, or fresh, depending on what they can afford. So in the coming months, I don't think is going to ease the hunger needs of the state, but it's only going to increase demand. We're entering the season where donations are down. Typically, starting from now through the summer, people forget about hunger, and the donations start dropping. What people have to realize is that kids go out of school in the summer, and if people are families are relying on school lunches and school breakfasts, those are meals that they have to try and scramble to provide through the summer. So I don't see it easing.
Well, we will definitely have the link to the New Hampshire Food Bank on our website, and I'm sure there people can get some guidance on how they can make an appropriate donation. Am I right?
That's correct. Thank you, John.
Well, we're happy to do that. Helen, thank you very much for taking some time with us.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Helen Costello, she runs the Recipe for Success program at the New Hampshire Food Bank. You are listening to Working It Out Live. I'm John Greenberg. Our topic today is food and the economy. We'd like to hear from you. What are you doing to make your food dollar go further? And if you're in the food business, what are you seeing going on? Our toll-free number is 1-800-892-6477. That number again is 1-800-892-6477. Let's go now to John Dumas. John is president of the New Hampshire Grocers Association. John, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, John.
John, your group, you represent everyone from the big supermarkets to the small convenience stores. Have they all had the same experience, or have some type of operations done better than others over the past year?
I think they've all been impacted by the economy and by the downturn in consumer demand for a lot of the products. And all of them have tried to be creative in the ways they satisfy the customer's needs.
So have they all struggled equally?
Basically, they have. We're looking at retail trends down approximately 20% from what they have been, and that's both in the convenience store as well as the supermarket for different reasons, but they both have been impacted the same way.
Wow, so you're saying 20% reduction in sales at convenience stores and grocery stores thanks to this recession.
Right.
Wow. Do you have a sense as to what people are not buying, where their buying habits have shifted?
Well, I think, as was mentioned before, that there certainly is less demand for the high-priced products. We saw during the wintertime that there was a lot less steak sold and a lot more hamburger was being purchased by the consumers. There was a bigger demand on private label products rather than the national brand products.
Private label so if I shop at one of Hannaford, Shaw's, right. Market Basket, it's got their label on the bag.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And in many cases, you know, they're high quality products, and in fact, and with this demand increase on it, the quality of the product is good, if not better, than some of the national brands. But they're at a lower price point, so it does save the consumer quite a bit of money by buying the private label.
John, Rachel's got a question for you.
I've been very aware of buying the store brand now, and a lot of people I know I talk to are doing that more. And as you say, the quality seems very good. And also what I noticed is that these brands are marketing and designing their packages to be much more attractive in the last year or so that I've noticed. Have you seen that?
Yes, very much so. Again, they've had a lot more power with the manufacturer of the product. So that they can get more attractive packaging and better quality product that they're putting out. And it's somewhat of a perception from the national that the national was higher priced and that, you know, you could get by with something a little less quality. But actually what we're finding is the consumers are finding out that the quality is as good, if not better, than the national brands in many cases. The other thing that we're seeing with that, too, is that the national brands, to compete and try and draw back some of the sales, are diversifying into more varieties of the same product. Rather than straight tomato soup, it's tomato soup with basil in it or other flavorings to create a different type of product for the consumer.
Well, John,
so
quick question. Does that work? Does that lead to more cans of tomato soup being sold?
Well, no, I think that we see that there's more of a turn to the private label product and the lower pricing. That's what's really driving the market right now.
All right. Well, we are talking about how the economy has worked its way through our food system here on Working It Out Live. I'm John Greenberg, and we're interested in your calls. Our toll-free number is 1-800-892-6477. If this economy has changed the way you shop, how you cook, anything at all along those lines, we'd like to hear it. If it's made you more generous, if it's made it harder for you to eat a healthy diet, or maybe easier, we'd like to know. But right now, I'd like to go to Jamie, who's calling in from Londonderry. Hello, Jamie.
Hi.
Hi. So you wrote in on the Working It Out website. What's been your experience?
My experience has been I've had to watch my spending more in the last year or so. And I am a member of a CSA.
Community-supported agriculture, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I've loved it. Originally, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I started attending farmers markets and just trying to be more aware of buying locally. But the CSA actually forces you, because, you know, you're given all these vegetables you've never heard of, to try cooking new recipes. So I've really kind of embraced the challenge of figuring out how to cook different vegetables that I would never have tried before. And I'm also becoming more aware of wanting to use whatever money I have to buy locally, because I'm not spending as much money, but I'm trying to make more of a local impact because of the economy.
Interesting, Jamie. So are you finding this effective, that if you're using the community-supported agriculture where you buy a share in advance, it's actually helping you to save money for yourself?
I definitely think it is. It's partly because I do think I get more for my dollar by doing the program, but I think it's also I tend to cook more vegetarian meals, so I'm not buying as much meat. I'm not buying as many prepared foods as I would have otherwise.
Right, and it's also taking you in new directions. Jamie, thank you very much for calling in with that.
Thank you for having me on here.
All right, bye-bye. John, I got a question for you. Are grocery stores trying to work with their shoppers to basically teach them new recipes, which is something that Jamie was describing that she needed to do?
Oh, no question. I mean, you see that very predominantly in the store. There's more recipes that are available in the produce department. There's in many of the produce departments, There's a lot of different varieties of fruits and vegetables with an explanation of what they are and how to use them. And that's all, you know, very helpful to the consumer to learn how to try these different things. I mean, like Jamie was saying, a lot of the stores are looking to be creative and saying, try different products, try some local produce that we have, try other things. And they're attempting through that, through coupons, through weekly flyer specials, to encourage more savings on the consumer.
All right. Well, we are taking your calls here on Working It Out Live. Let's go now to Billy, who's calling from Laconia. Hello, Billy.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, I'm glad. Thanks for calling in. So what have you been seeing?
Well, as I was telling the gentleman that answered the phone, I had been grocery shopping about a week and a half ago. Actually, it was a week ago on a Friday at one of the major food chains, Shaw's. But the thing that struck me was when I was going down the aisles, they had employees going through the shelves, taking off items that were either expired, and some of them were, or were on the expiration date or close to it. And we were talking about canned items. We're talking about salad dressings and then dairy products. And I said to one of them finally, at the third one, why, what do you do with these? Certainly you give these to food banks. And as a previous caller had said, we're coming into the summer months and people have a tendency to forget. And there was an emphatic, oh, no, we get a store credit from either the wholesaler or the manufacturer of these items. And I said, well, then what do you do with them? Oh, we throw them in the dumpster. And no. I said, you've got to be kidding me. And it's perfectly, and again, so a lot of the foods weren't even at their expiration date.
Wow.
That just seems, you know.
Shocking.
Today's environment, it's shocking.
Yeah.
It's an understatement. And I just, you know, it's just a comment I wanted to make. And certainly, they're not alone.
Yeah.
In this one food chain of this one grocery chain. There has to be others. And
I hear you, Billy.
I hear you. Okay.
No, Billy, you're raising a really good point. Thank you very much for bringing it in. John, you obviously work with the New Hampshire Food Bank and your members work with the New Hampshire Food Bank. What's going on here? Is this what Billy sees really taking place?
No, unfortunately, that might be a particular store manager that doesn't understand what the chain is looking for. I know in that chain and several other chains that a lot of the product gets returned to their distribution center where it's redistributed back to the food bank after the store's gotten the credit for it. And there's a substantial amount of product that the food bank gets. It's called salvage product that they get from stores that are remodeling, changing, or near out of code dates, and it goes directly to the food bank for their benefit. And so that's not the common way it happens. More likely that'll happen in a smaller independent who can't get it back to the warehouse or to the food bank in time to do it. They may throw it out that way. But that we have worked for years. Back in almost 20 years ago, we helped pass legislation, the Good Samaritan Act, that protects the stores if they donate food to the food bank or to any local agency.
All right,
in
John.
Good faith there.
John, I think we're going to have to go to a break now. John Dumas is president of the New Hampshire Grocers Association. Thank you very much, John. I'm John Greenberg. More on Working It Out Live coming your way in just a moment. 1-800-892-6477. Give us a call.
Next time on the Socrates Exchange, we ask, is it ever right to do what's wrong? How do we define wrong or right? By how it harms others or ourselves or certain basic goods in our world? Are some things always right or always wrong? Or can lying, cheating, and killing ever be justified? Our live show is May 27th, but the conversation has already begun online. Visit the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org and get Socratic.
The Socrates Exchange is made possible in part by Bank of America and the New Hampshire Humanities Council.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Support comes from your members and CNS Wholesale Grocers supporting Feeding America to provide hope and sustenance to families nationally and regionally struggling with hunger. Information at community.cswg.com.
And from Hearing Solutions New England, where audiologists diagnose hearing loss and dispense hearing aids, in Nashua, Manchester, Concord, and online at hearingsolutionsne.com. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm John Greenberg, and you're listening to Working It Out Live, NHPR's monthly call-in show about how we're dealing with this recession and recovery. This hour, we're talking about food and the economy. You're invited to join the conversation. Our toll-free number is 1-800-892-6477. Number again, 1-800-892-6477. Are you doing things to make your food dollar go just that much further? Has this recession changed where you shop, what you buy, what you do? Has it affected your business? Has it affected your community? How have you stepped up? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With me in the studio is Rachel Forrest. She's a food writer for the Portsmouth Herald. Rachel, in your group working at Share Our Strength, are you guys taking different kinds of steps than you've ever taken before to help people get the food they need?
Well, we are actually, you know, raising money so that groups like the New Hampshire Food Bank and Seacoast Family Food Pantry can get the food they need. So that's what we do.
You're the money people.
We're the money people, right? So, but one of the big things that we do is raise awareness. So we'll make sure that people know, for example, what Helen was talking about in terms of people need to be more educated. So they're
Helen
they're not,
from the New Hampshire Food Bank.
Indeed. So that more educated about how to cook the food, so the food doesn't go to waste, which is another issue with cooking economically, and also make sure that people are aware where the need is the most.
All right. Well, let's go now to Russ, who's calling in from Madison. Hello, Russ. Hello, Russ. Are you there?
I am here.
Hi. Well, thank you very much for calling in. So what's been your story in terms of the economy and food?
Well, the last caller made me think of my daughter, who's a starving artist out in Bozeman, Montana, who manages to get a hold of a lot of that stuff that's outdated. I won't explain the details.
I think it's called dumpster diving. Is that right?
Essentially.
All right.
But that's not why I called. I happen to have been fortunate enough last year to host the initial run of the Mount Washington Valley Community Garden. I have some ag land that's been sitting idle for years, and the community, under the auspices of the Mount Washington Valley Chamber of Commerce, we're looking to have a community garden. I said, why don't you use this? So I've lent them the land. I've given them some compost to get themselves started. We sawed out some wood for the edges of the boards, and what happens is the people use the beds. They pay $25 a year for the bed, and they can grow whatever they want, so long as it's organic.
All right. Yeah, Rachel.
Yeah, we're seeing a huge resurgence in community gardens, and the Seacoast Community Garden Network just launched on the Seacoast to help people find different plots of lands in the area and share ideas about having community gardens or a little plot of land wherever you can find it to do just that.
Russ, are you finding lots of takers for the land on your community garden? I guess we don't have Russ there anymore. And that question will be hanging out there. But I wonder, Rachel, if you're looking at people getting more into this community garden scene, are more people doing something to teach people how to do this kind of gardening?
Yeah, there's a lot more networking going on that way. And UNH has a wonderful outreach program, and to extension, the cooperative extension will be at the farmers markets to teach people how to plant your own garden, even on a very small level. And that's another part of the education of working with what's coming up. I mean, the caller about, you know, she's in the CSA and she's going to have a lot of kale at some point, and she's going to need to know what to do about it. So a lot of the network is involved, you know, well, make some kale chips, make, you know, kale soup.
Well, it's probably a burning need for kale guidance. Let's go now to Francie, who's calling in from Harrisville. Hello, Francie.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, I'm delighted. Go ahead. What's your story with food?
Well, mine is more of a question. I was underemployed and needed to cut back. So I cut out the most expensive stuff, which is mostly meats. And then now I'm unemployed. So where do I cut back now? Do you have any advice or people that have been in such a situation and still want to eat but have very little budget?
Yes, that's a habit that that people have, wanting to eat. Francie, you're raising an important question. Rachel, do you have some suggestions?
Yeah, the thing about eating a healthy but really flavorful diet is to concentrate on very intensely flavored food because it's rich in nutrients, but you need less. For example, if you had to cut back on meats, but you don't really want to eliminate it entirely, you know, just having a stir fry with a bit of chicken and but lots of really richly flavored vegetables will get you just a touch of meat that you need, or a little bit of grilled beef, just a little bit. And, you know, very intensely flavored cheeses like feta, things like that. You just need a little bit, and it's a lot of flavor and nutrients.
Well, Francie, my question is, do you have the money to buy food, period?
Barely. Yeah.
And, of course, the next question is, have you applied for some, it's called SNAP now, but basically it's the food stamp program.
No, I haven't. And partially I'm not just sure what the process is or where to go, which I need to discover.
All right. Well, we will come up with an answer on that. I don't know if you've got web access, but we will post that answer on our website. Or if we can get it while we're on air, we will give you that answer. Or if someone has the answer and wants to call in with it, that's fine too. Francie, I do wish you the best in solving this problem. What's your basic line of work?
I'm teaching. I'm a mathematician.
All right. Well, we certainly need math and science teachers. I hope you find your slot. Thank you very much, and really hang in there.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
All right. This is really goes to show, Rachel, that for all the talk or suggestion that maybe the recession is easing, clearly there are people who are still struggling out there. And I wonder, what do you see going on the seacoast? Is there a sense? I mean, that's one of the better areas financially of the state.
Well, there is a sense that, you know, things haven't, you know, have not really gotten better, you know, in the last 6 months or so. But we're finding a lot more groups getting together and cooking together and helping each other out that way. And it's still a lot of giving to the food banks. And, you know, there's a bit of the stigma that's, as Helen from the New Hampshire Food Bank was saying, more people coming in to the food banks who had been donating, that's sort of making this dialogue a little more open about, if you need help, more people are asking for help and getting it.
All right. Let's go to Christine, who's calling in from Keene. Good afternoon, Christine.
Oh, hi there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and I'm glad I caught the program. I just wanted to put in a quick message about some community education that I do with UNH Cooperative Extension. I don't know if anybody's had a chance to mention this yet today, but we do a program across the state called Nutrition Connections for income-eligible households, and it's about everything that you've been talking about online today, on the radio today, which is how do you cook on a tight budget, how do you keep it healthy, how do you set your priorities.
Christine, I spoke to Debbie, your colleague, yesterday for our report this morning.
Yes.
What I'm wondering is, can you give an answer to Francie's question just a moment ago? How does somebody apply for food stamps, or the SNAP program, as it's called?
Oh, I can't give a quick answer. I have a brochure I can mail to her with all of the information about applying, and I'd be happy to talk to her on the phone.
Do you have a general sense of how someone gets started, or where she might make her first call?
The first call is to the local DHHS office. And I don't know that off the top of my head anymore, but Department of Health and Human Services is the first call. If you're a senior, you don't need to come into the office to apply. There are other ways, but I believe that other people still need to make an appointment and come in person to sign up for food stamps.
All right. Well, we now have a telephone number that I'd like to read out there. Go for Francie. This is the SNAP hotline, and that is the Nutrition Assistance Program. The phone number is this, 1-800-892-3345, extension 0747. So I'll read that again. 1-800-852-3345, extension 0747. And we will also put that number on our website. Thank you very much, Abby, for getting that number to us. So, Christine, thank you very much for calling in. I want to go now to Sharon Demers. Sharon owns the Grafton Country Store on Route 4 in Grafton. Sharon, I'm glad you could take the time with us today.
Hi, how are you today, John?
I'm good. Can you give us a sense of how big your store is? You've got a gas station part outside. What's inside, real briefly?
We sell a variety of grocery items, you know, from soup to nuts. We have fresh meat. We have fresh produce. We have a large deli. We sell lunch meat, takeout food, pizza, cheeseburgers, subs, and we rent movies, and we have lots of cold drinks and snack foods.
Well, what did you see your customers doing differently due to the recession?
Well, as soon as the gas prices went up, which is, in my personal opinion, is what caused a big part of this recession, they started to allocate their money a little bit differently. For example, my average customer spends $20 a day in my store in three visits. So in the morning, they used to put, you know, maybe $10 worth of gas in their car. Now they might only put $5 or $8 worth of gas, just enough to get to and from work. Then on the, you know, or they would buy a breakfast sandwich and a cup of coffee. Now it might just be the gas and a cup of coffee. Upon returning from work, they would stop for a snack, a drink, or maybe something for dinner, and then later in the evening come down for a movie and another snack food. But now they're just getting the necessities, things like milk, bread, maybe if they're a smoker, their cigarettes and their gas. And those are all low-profit margins.
So that sounds like that's made it much more difficult for you to keep a healthy bottom line.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Between that and the lack of margin on the gasoline, it's very difficult. If you can believe this, when gas was $1.59 a gallon, I made more money per gallon than I do when gas is $2.59 a gallon.
Because I imagine there's less wiggle room, if you will, with for the market to bear. You've got to be tighter to what people can afford. You've also been pressed on the other side because I've been reading that suppliers are charging more because gasoline costs more. They've got higher distribution costs. What's that been like for you?
Exactly. Every single supplier held the line as long as they could, and then they increased their prices of their products, and then they also tacked on delivery charges. For example, even for me to have the Boston Globe delivered to my store, there's an extra $7 a week delivery charge. And when you only make 3 cents a newspaper, that erodes all the profit. The other thing is that there's been a decrease in the actual consumption of gasoline. I checked with my supplier this morning, and they supply the number two brand in New England, and the sales are down 15%. The gallons are down 15%.
Sharon, I got a question for you. I was looking at some national numbers and also hearing from people around the state. Consumption of snack food, some of the least nutritious, the least costly snack foods are up. Have you been seeing that same pattern at your store?
Yes. My snack food sales are up about 12%, although my overall inside store sales are not up 12%.
All right. Sharon, we're having a little bit of trouble holding on to your signal. I want to thank you very much for taking some time to tell us what's going on with running a country store up there in Grafton. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, and I'd be glad to help you out anytime.
Super. Well, I hope to get up there and see you myself. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Sharon Demers, she owns the Grafton Country Store in Route 4 in Grafton. This is Working It Out Live. I'm John Greenberg. We're here with Rachel Forrest, who writes for the Portsmouth Herald. Let's go now to Jennifer, who's calling in from Milford. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi. So tell us about food and the economy from your vantage point.
Well, it's strange. I moved up to New Hampshire from Boston about 6 years ago and was so capable of getting so many organic, relatively inexpensive, fresh, healthy things, was a huge variety, and I move up to this area that's just surrounded by farming communities, and it's so difficult to find, you know, the variety of fresh, healthy, and organic was difficult. And I noticed that I started shopping at Shaw's locally, and they rehabbed their store like probably 6 months ago. And I found that they've removed most of their organic items. I mean, they no longer really sell any organic meat, which is kind of like number one priority for my family.
Jennifer, I wonder, what have you done to sort of explore where you can get the meat you want, the produce you want, if you're not going to be able to get it at your local grocery store?
Well, we first cut down on meat. And second, we've been looking at a bunch of local farms that actually produce grass-fed organic beef.
Oh, so you'll buy a quarter of a cow or half a cow or something like that?
Or go in on it with several other families.
Right.
To make it cost effective. But yeah, it's been a lot more, you know, doing things ourselves rather than just going to a store and picking something out.
All right, Jennifer, thanks very much for calling in. I think we've got time for one more call. Let's go now to Matt, who's calling in from Antrim. We'll see if we get Matt. We might not have him.
I'm here. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I've got a list I'll run down.
No, you got to keep it really short, Matt. I'm very sorry. Just name one thing on your list, whatever it is.
The New Hampshire Department of Agriculture's weekly market bulletin that they have, you know, different farmers advertising there, and there's all kinds of organic meats if you want it, but vegetables, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, well.
Slaughter off smash up chicken bones when I buy those whole roasters. You can buy spoiled fruits. On the discount counters, I go to thrift stores for my bread, and I eat beans, lentils, pea soup, more beans, and beans.
I hear you. And Matt, this is the way that you're stretching your food dollar. You're cutting it from, you're making it from scratch. That's excellent, Matt. Thank you very much for calling in. Rachel, very quickly. Do you see more people doing what Matt's doing, just basically saying, I'm going to get the cheapest food where I can, and I'm going to cook those grains and those beans?
Oh, yeah, we're being resourceful and being more creative with our cooking. I mean, let's think of many different ways to, you know, mix the kale with the beans. I mean, it's great flavor and it's inexpensive, but, yeah, seeing lots more resourcefulness and creativity that way.
All right. Well, Rachel, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Rachel Forrest is a food writer for the Portsmouth Herald. Thank you for joining us for Working It Out Live. It is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. It's produced with assistance from Abby Goldstein and Andrew Perella. Dan Colgan is our engineer. Live tweeting was handled by Ashley Lang. And congratulations, Ashley, on graduating from UNH Manchester. Working It Out is made possible in part by the Common Man family of restaurants. I'm John Greenberg. This program is fueled by the notes you post on the Working It Out page at nhpr.org. The story of this economy is your story. Please tell it and join us next month for the wrap-up edition of Working Out Live when we look at what's happened in the past year.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Next week on Word of Mouth, an artist celebrates the 100th anniversary of Jacques Cousteau's birth. We'll hear stories he's gathered of the deep blue sea as told by people around the world. And recreating the world brick by plastic brick inside the grown-up obsessions of Lego enthusiasts. Word of Mouth brings you the sound of new ideas Monday through Thursday at noon here on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Here and Now is next at 1 o'clock.